I'm glad that the world hasn't ended. There's a lot of conspiracy theories going around for a bit that the mere act of the moon moving,
yes,
would in some way trigger some sort of apocalyptic thing. And of course, all of the media was buying into it. They knew.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. The media always knows.
Yeah, as a member of the media, we know these things. The world was supposed to end. That's why we were telling everyone to do like doomsday prepping and stuff. Totally not because the eclipse always causes a crazy amount of like traffic.
Yeah.
And we don't want people to be trapped in their cars for hours on end and starve.
Or at least be a little peckish at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally all the doomsday prepping was make sure you have all the emergency gear in your car that you need and bring snacks.
Yeah, my family lives near one of the like hot spots for watching the totality,
mm-hmm.
and around there they were advising to basically prep as though, you know, there was going to be a 2-week lockdown.
Oh,
but yeah, it was like have emergency food and water on hand because they were expecting that many people to just be flooding. The Yellow Springs.
Yes, the Yellow Springs. Ooh, outing yourself. Doxing yourself. You gotta be careful there a little bit.
It's a town near. Also, we just straight up say where we're from all the time.
I mean, we're in the greater Cincinnati area.
In northern Kentucky.
In northern Kentucky. The city of Covington. Anyway, not that any of that matters. What does matter, of course, is we got Outlaws of Thunder Junction set spoilers to talk about, as well as a free Dungeons & Dragons adventure. Since they're partnering with LEGO, you can get a free adventure from them now, which is pretty cool in my mind. But I do want to point out that this is not a solar eclipse podcast.
No.
No.
No, we're day late, dollar short.
Days and dollars. Many days, many dollars. But this is ostensibly a Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering podcast. Of course, the Duels and Mana Dorks podcast. I am Connor.
And I'm Sam.
And we are the Dungeon Bros, but we are not brothers.
Nor are we in a dungeon.
And we like to talk about Magic the Gathering and D&D and other TCGs and other TTRPGs and all that kind of acronyms and such. We do want to thank one of our sponsors for the podcast, the Proxy Forge. You can check them out at proxyforge.com for beautiful Magic the Gathering proxies. They got a lot of cool stuff. If you use the link in our Beacons link in the bio, we have like a little support us tab. I just consolidated it all into one so that it's like, here's the one thing you can click to support us, and then you have all the options and then all the podcast stuff in addition to all the socials and stuff at the top. But you can just click on the how to support us thing, and you can find a Proxy Forge link there, and you can get some cool proxies. We play with them all the time when we play our Monday Night Magic live streamed two-player brawl rules. I know, paper brawl. Brawl rules commander games with one another. The Proxy Forge proxies tend to come up quite a bit. We are a very pro proxy podcast as well.
Yeah, yes.
As well.
Play with the good things.
Of course. Of course. We've taken a little bit of a break from the bonus action podcast. They're little extra episodes where we have interviews and discussions with various people in tabletop RPGs and Magic the Gathering and all that stuff. We've had Randy Sackett of the Forge Realm on. We've had the bearded GM himself. We've also had Ivy, CEO of the Crit Awards, the Creator Recognition and Tabletop RPG Awards show that started last year at Gen Con. Second year, it's going to be this year. We're excited to go to that. We're going to be getting back into that soon. It was just kind of a little, we're trying it out just to see and try to do a little bit of collab. But we like to not spend the money on podcast recording software every month. Fair so fair. We like to load them up and then do them all at once. Let's see. Of course, the Duels and Mandrakes podcast you can get on Apple, Google, Spotify, YouTube Music, all the various podcast services around the globe. And if you do listen to the podcast and you like it regularly, or you're just one of our friends who is listening to it, then you should do a review on whatever your podcast service of choice is. It's the best way to help us in the algorithm. But Sam, what have you been playing? What's been going on in your life right now?
My life right now, gaming wise, of course. God damn it, there's a guy on TikTok who his whole bit is just doing things like a millennial, and he talks like this a lot.
Oh, all the time.
And I've just been seeing a lot of his content. Oh, anyway, God. And that just struck me. I am so sorry. Was playing some Fallout 4 for a while. Was hoping to play the Fallout 4 Commander decks, like a little pre-con pod. That kind of fell through, unfortunately, just due to timing. Of our friend's availability.
Yeah. Are you planning on picking up any cards from the set?
There are a couple of cards. They're like strong back. Is an aura, green aura, that would go really well in my Ivy Gleeful Spell Thief deck. It reduces costs to target with enchantments by, I believe, 3.
It seems a little excessive.
It's pretty good. And also buffs for having enchantments and equipment on the creature.
Which is good, because you want to be casting it onto things that aren't Ivy and copying it onto her. That's fair.
Exactly.
That's fair.
In the world of video games, though, was playing a lot of Fallout 4, burnt myself out on that, as we do here in modern gaming.
Yeah.
It's burning ourselves out. Moved on to Doom.
Doom.
2016 Doom. I played it when it, you know, came out years ago, and I actually, there was a free game with gold with PlayStation Plus this month that was The Immortals of Something.
Mm. Immortals of Avium?
Yeah, that one. It is a Doom-like, but like also it's weird. It's a very weird...
It's like spellcasting, but guns.
Spellcasting, but guns. But my big problem with it is the dialogue and the plot. The plot is hang on by a thread at all times.
I mean...
But the dialogue, they speak like we would speak here. It's a very modern speech. But it's also supposed to be like a high fantasy sort of magitech world. And so they're combining things like, yes, we must go get the Crystal of Elysium in order to stop the Dreadlord from taking over the world. For real? For real, for real.
I mean, that's just campy, dumb stuff. From what I've heard, the gameplay of it is very fun.
It's okay.
Isn't it like they're casting spells and then they like reload their fists and shit because you have to do like gunplay mechanics?
It's literally just gunplay. Like
I love it.
You have all times you have a rifle, a shotgun, or a SMG basically equipped, and you can buff those with your different abilities. It's an alright game.
I've heard it's very underrated and people. It was widely reviled when it came out, and there's been like a resurgence of people being like, this is actually a pretty good game.
I don't hate it. I'm not compelled to continue to play it. That's and thus fair. I downloaded Doom because Doom, yeah, like I said, it's kind of a Doom-like, and Doom is a very good game.
That's fair.
What have you been munching on in the gaming world?
Well, of course, I'm slowly working my way through Persona 5 Royal in downtime at work. LOL. Hope no one, my bosses, there's no reason my bosses would watch this. And then, with all of the hype surrounding Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I'm actually for the first time starting to play through Final Fantasy VII Remake. One that's been on my backlog for a very long time, which, if you know anything about me and my tastes in video games, you should probably be very surprised that I haven't yet played that game. Kingdom Hearts kind of combat, in a way. I love Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
I love Final Fantasy, so the fact that I haven't played... I loved the original Final Fantasy VII. It's just I played the demo around when the remake came out, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I got distracted. And I've been distracted ever since, until now, with all the Rebirth hype. I'm like, I might as well just get into that. But let's get into the upcoming releases for D&D and Magic the Gathering. We go over them every single week. Or every other week when we do the podcast. Every single podcast, which is every other week. It's a whole. Don't worry about it. Samuel.
Diving in. So in the D&D world, first up we have the Eye of Vecna. Sorry. Vecna, Eve of Ruin. Not to be confused with the Eye of Vecna, a magical item in D&D.
Everyone's been calling it Eye of Vecna accidentally, too.
Eve and I are one letter off.
And the V is just a Y that had its that much like some shelter cats had their tail chopped off.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly. So anyway, Vecna, Eve of Ruin. It's going to be available on D&D Beyond and at local game stores on May 7th with full retail on May 21st. This also you can get Vecna, Nest of the Eldritch Eye, a prequel adventure for lower levels and that'll be available with all pre-orders and for $4.99 on D&D Beyond. Next up, not a D&D adventure, but more of a coffee table book, The Making of Original D&D 1970 to 1976. That will be available on June 18th. And finally, the last one we have, the last 5E.
2014's 5th edition.
Yes, 2014's 5th edition book we have coming out will be Quest from the Infinite Staircase, this year's anthology book. That will be available on D&D Beyond at local game stores on July 9th, with the full release on July 16th. Next, we have the D&D 5th edition 2024 revision.
We're going to call it 1D&D.
1D&D. 1D&D, the Player's Handbook, will come out on September 17th. The Dungeon Master's Guide will come out on November 12th. And the Monster Manual will come out on February 18th of next year.
All of them with a week early release on D&D Beyond as well.
Moving on to Magic the Gathering, Outlaws of Thunder Junction. The pre-release is this Friday, if you're listening, if you're watching live or listening when it comes out, April 12th, with the full release on April 19th. We have Modern Horizons 3, which pre-release will start on June 7th, and the full release will be on June 14th. Assassin's Creed Universes Beyond comes out on July 5th. Bloomborough will be pre-releasing on July 26th with full release on August 2nd. And finally, Duskmourne House of Horrors will be releasing in Q4 of this year.
And of course, the Daggerheart playtest is out right now, if you are so inclined. It's probably one of the most popular non-D&D tabletop RPGs right now, I would say. Up there with the likes of Pathfinder
and stuff. It's in beta.
It's in beta, and it's got a lot of cool stuff going on. So if you want to mold it into your perfect tabletop RPG, now is your opportunity. But, of course, Outlaws of Thunder Junction is releasing this weekend in pre-release, so we pretty much know all of the cards in the set. We know all the set mechanics. We know what the vibe is for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, and so we're going to just give you the whole set preview. We've talked about random things that have popped up as the weeks have gone on, but now we got our full overview of the entire set. Let's go over first the set specific mechanics. There are five main mechanics. Some of them are basically just other mechanics with extra steps, much like how disguise was morph with an extra step.
Everything is kicker.
Everything is kicker. For example, spree, which is kicker. Spree appears on cards that have one, two, they're usually very low mana cost instance and sorceries, and then spree, you get to choose which modes you want to use on the spell, and they cost additional mana for each mode that you choose, so you can get a very basic effect for very low mana. You can get a whole ton of effects if you dump a ton of mana into it. They're very versatile. You got a lot of options with them. Even though they have a base mana cost and a spree cost with them, they also seem to be fairly reasonable in the mana cost for the effects that they're causing as well.
I think the effects usually, from the ones we've seen them all now, from the ones we've looked at a lot, which one of the red ones, there's two, it's red, and mm-hmm. then the activated, the either have add one generic to redirect a spell, or you have one to copy a spell.
A 3-mana deflecting swat where you can throw extra mana in to then get the spell that you are deflecting.
Yeah.
Or a different spell.
Basically, yeah, exactly. Either of those is well costed. Mm-hmm. Like, those are pretty on average. But if you do both of them, which, of course, you're not going to be doing both of them a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Maybe in more interactive or higher power games where the stack can get complicated. But yeah, overall, I like the spree mechanic.
I think the spree mechanic is probably the best one in the set, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The plot mechanic is in a weird spot, I think. It's nice. It is nice because the whole thing with plot is that it is effectively foretell. But instead of foretelling for a standard of 2 mana and then spending more mana to cast it later, which is usually less than the mana cost printed on the card, you instead pay the plot cost when you put it face down, and then you can cast it at sorcery speed for free anytime on a future turn. You just can't do it on the same turn that mm-hmm. you plot it. I like this more than foretell, just because it's one of those, like, you can keep things pretty low-key in the early turns, and you're just kind of quietly plotting some stuff. Plotting. Yeah. And then you can have a big explosive turn where you don't need a lot of mana, or if you run out of mana setting up a big turn, then you have free payoffs that you've been just banking, particularly with cards like Fibblethip, which make it a lot easier to plot cards, and you can just plot
off the top of your deck
over and over again with a whole bunch of stuff, which is cool.
Yeah. Plot is one I'm very interested in. I do need to see somebody online play this and play a deck they've built, because I know there's some broken stuff you can probably do with it.
Oh, absolutely.
But with it being just at the casting being at sorcery speed, that does change a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, you could probably set up some huge, like, storm turns.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Leave yourself open a little bit. Leave yourself open. All right. Cast one. No response? Cool. Next. Okay, priority? Cool. all right, now that I've cast 5 spells, storm off.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I get it. It's cool. I'm interested to see how that one plays out in a longer.
One that will certainly almost assuredly be ignored, except for some very specific interactions with powerful cards. Outlaws is a new creature collective, much like the party mechanic from D&D, where you had to have a wizard, a rogue, a warrior, and cleric.
Yes.
Yeah. Some combination therein. Now you have outlaws, which matter for assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are now a collective. I think it's a bit less restrictive than the party mechanic, where it wanted you to have one of each or multiple kinds within the party group, whereas this just affects multiple creature classes.
Yeah.
While also, it's just a lot easier to write out outlaws. Mm-hmm. But then most of the time they have reminder text on them, so it's a whole thing. But with rogues and assassins and pirates specifically, you can be getting a lot of very powerful creatures that are getting bonus effects. Like, I believe there's one that, like, doubles ETBs for outlaw things.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which, I don't know if you know this, but, like, Dockside Extortionist is a pirate.
Yeah, he is.
So there's some powerful synergies with specific cards, but I imagine that this isn't going to be something that we're going to see a lot of or come back in the future.
I'm sure. I can imagine this because like the party mechanic, as we were talking about earlier. It appeared in Zendikar. It reappeared in one of the Dungeons and Dragons set, and then from there, it's kind of like, I'm not going to play with any party cards because that's too much work to think about. This is, like you said, a lot easier, where it's just like, buff that creature and I guess my commander. Okay.
Yeah. There's certainly some commanders that you can also build around, where you now have a new tribe that you can build around effectively that isn't just a single creature type, but isn't just all creature types, like a changeling deck or something.
Sure.
We've got two more mechanics. The big one of this set that it has a lot of cards printed around it is committing a crime, which is probably going to be the easiest thing to put online because it just references a type of game action that you're almost always doing in games. Yeah. It's committing a crime. To commit a crime, you have to cast a spell, activate an ability, or have a triggered ability that targets one or more of either an opponent, a spell or an ability an opponent controls, a permanent an opponent controls, or a card in an opponent's graveyard. So effectively, just any, if you're interacting with any of your opponent's stuff, you're committing a crime.
Yes.
Which, on flavor. every time my board is interacted with, it's criminal. It's a criminal offense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Arrest them.
Arrest them.
Murder.
So in any deck that wants to be interactive with the table, these commit a crime cards are certainly going to be helpful.
I will say most of the commit a crime cards have this activate, so this triggers only once per turn. Definitely, I can understand why they did that, because some of these are very easy, like commit a crime, draw a card, commit a crime, do X, could get out of hand very easily.
I mean, that turns into bounce an opponent's creature, draw a card, counter a spell, draw a card.
Yeah.
Damage, like, there's a lot, even if you're just like, oh, I cast Opt, but I have something that triggers a ping effect.
Yeah.
Now that's committed a crime, and now I can, it can very much spiral out of control. There are several that don't have
turn
stipulation, so keep an eye out for
them. A couple of legendary creatures, especially.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The last core set mechanic is mount creatures and the saddle ability. Mount is just a new creature type that doesn't really mean anything in and of itself, but mount creatures tend to, I believe all so far have the saddle ability.
Yes.
Which is basically crew.
Yes.
Instead of having an artifact that is not a creature until it is crewed, these are still creatures, and you can still attack with them as normal. And if you choose to tap other creatures that you control that have a collective power equal to or exceeding the saddle number, so saddle 1, you need a creature of power 1 or more. And you can, of course, just over-saddle a creature if you so desired. There's a million reasons you would want to tap your own things down. But when a creature is saddled, when they attack or when they do some other action in the game, there's an additional benefit associated with it. Like the new Gitrog monster. When it attacks, you can sacrifice the creature that saddled it, and then you can, I believe it's draw cards equal to its mana value or something like that.
And then put, I believe, land cards tapped onto the battlefield equal to its mana value as well.
Yeah, so you get more value out of attacking with these saddleable... I like this more than crew, but I also feel like it's by far the most niche ability in the set. I like it more than crew just because it's able to act on its own as a somewhat basic creature, because a lot of them still have things like reach or trample or vigilance and that kind of stuff. But it's I like it just from the perspective, I like it a lot from the perspective of being able to utilize 1/1 tokens with outside of just blockers or fodder to be taken out by a blocker.
Yeah. I think that the ones I've seen of the saddle mechanic, not a huge amount of creatures, not a huge amount of mounts in the set, but the saddle abilities, I do like a lot of them more than I like a lot of vehicle abilities that we see.
Yes, absolutely.
There's one, I mean, in a second we'll get into some more interesting cards, but there's one in particular that is a little bit of a color break that I enjoy. And we'll talk about that in just a second.
In a minute. But one more. This isn't a core set mechanic. This is for the commander decks. Much like with March of the Machine, where they came with plane chase cards for like a little sub mini game going on during a commander game, they now have bounties that are going to come with all of these commander decks. Effectively, it is an additional deck in the middle of the game where you have, after the starting player's third turn, you flip over the top one, and then the bounty has some kind of a requirement where, like, at the beginning of your end step, you need to have done this game action of some kind. And if you fulfill that, you then get a reward. If you fulfill it the very first turn that it's flipped up, you get a treasure token. And then for every turn that passes that it isn't fulfilled, once you fulfill it, you get more value, which is either additional treasure tokens or you add on the ability to draw cards. So very basic rewards, nothing as crazy as Plane Chase. It's a bit simpler than Plane Chase. Just another way to spice up and kind of speed up your commander games a little bit, because I feel like a lot of games can fall into the trap of, all right, we've been playing for 2 hours because nobody has adequate interaction. Well, at least now we've got mana and card draw to help speed things up a little bit.
Yeah, and a lot of them, they aren't complicated game actions either. I know one of them is, if you did not cast a spell this turn, at the beginning of your end step, you may claim this bounty.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very helpful for somebody who's like, nah, I spend 3 turns and I've made 2 land drops. What do I do?
I've made 2 land drops or something like Slimefoot and Squee, where you're spending a lot of mana on activated abilities.
Yep.
So you're not casting spells once your commander's out. You're putting them into the graveyard with a game action and then pulling it out with an activated ability and pulling something and dumping mana into non-spellcasty things and that such. So those are the core mechanics of the set. I think as far as set mechanics go, I really like Spree. I like Plot. Commit a Crime, I feel like it's going to be a mechanic that only ever appears in this set, so I'm not super excited. Mm-hmm. I feel like Plot and Spree can come up in other sets, especially Spree.
Yeah.
And I would like them to. And then Outlaws, I feel like there's going to be random cards that reference Outlaws in the future. But
I think Spree definitely has the ability, a staying ability. Mm-hmm. These cards, those are the cards that we're going to definitely see, like, CE long-term play in formats.
Absolutely.
Plot cards, definitely going to see a more niche, very specific...
Bless me. I'm sure I heard that. I'm sure it was picked up on your mic. I sneezed quite loudly.
But plot is going to be very niche gameplay types, and we're probably not going to see one-off plot cards too often.
Yeah.
Commit a Crime, I could see just a one-off card be that, you know, if you're in a, like I said, a highly interactive deck, just for a value piece.
I could see Commit a Crime come back in like a New Capenna.
New Capenna.
I could see that happening. Alright, so we've gone over the core set mechanics. There are a couple of card themes and some cards that we want to point out. One of the big ones are the Joins Up legendary enchantments that are referencing the core members of the titular Outlaws that are legendary enchantments that are have very powerful effects. So things like Kellen Joins Up or Tiny Bones Joins Up and that kind of stuff. They're, some of them are a bit niche, some of them are a bit more powerful than others, but it's a whole cycle of cards, and I love a legendary enchantment.
Sure.
I love very powerful enchantments, and pretty much all of them are very powerful. Like, the Tiny Bones one is one mana.
Yeah.
A one mana legendary enchantment that has a lot of text on it. So.
They usually have an ETB and then an additional static ability.
Yeah.
Static ability.
I don't think any of them are cost more than 3 or 4.
No, I'm pretty sure most, yeah. I think Tiny Bones is the only monocolor one, and then the rest are in 3-color.
No, Vraska's in 2, Rakdos is in 2.
But makes sense.
They match
they're from the guilds.
They match the colors that they are, their creature.
But Kellen is 3, the new character that they introduced in this set, I can't remember her name.
I know what you're talking about. Well, that's embarrassing. So we also have some new lands. We got more fast lands in, I believe they're the allied colors now, because I think they were enemy. There are the enemy colors now.
They're across from each other.
Yes, yes, yes. So the fast lands are dual lands that enter untapped if you control 2 or fewer lands, so they're really good early in the game. In faster games where you're not getting as many land drops in, they are effectively lands that enter untapped. And then we have tapped desert lands, where when they enter the battlefield, they deal 1 damage to a target opponent.
Yeah.
I don't know where those are going to really land. They have the desert subtype for a land, and there's a lot of desert synergies in this set as well.
There's a few other desert synergies in previous sets, but they're very limited, often either to colors or black.
Yeah.
They're not bad abilities, they're just niche.
Yeah, and it's going to be a bit harder to fetch these tapped duels, which we saw with Murders at Karlov Manor, the fetchable lands that enter tapped and have an ability attached onto them are much, much more useful and valuable than non-fetchable lands that enter tapped and have a static ability. It's the difference between the Scry lands and the Survey lands.
Yeah.
Survey lands are very popular because you can fetch them. Scry lands, you can't.
And then the ability like of these deserts to do 1 damage... That's pretty, especially in a commander format, that's pretty non-sequential, it's not as valuable. It's not as valuable as say a Surveil or even a Scry.
I will say I bet those damaging lands are a bit more valued in very low to the ground burny decks in 2-player formats. Obviously, you're going to want your lands to be untapped so you can cast things, but when most of your things are 1, 2, and 3 mana, making a 4th and 5th land drop that just pings your opponent for 1 might be more valuable than having the open mana in some instances. I'm sure people are going to be playing around with. We have 2 fun cards, the Cunning Coyote and the Resilient Roadrunner. I don't know if you know this, Sam, but they're a reference.
I did know that.
Yeah. Wile E. Coyote reference. The Roadrunner has protection from coyotes. Hold on, we need to pull it up.
Go to the search of this and their search engine. Oh, there it is.
The Resilient Roadrunner. It's a 2/2 bird with haste and protection from coyotes. And then you can pay 3 mana to make it unblockable except by creatures with haste. And then if we pull up the Coyote, which I believe is the first time we have a creature with the creature type of Coyote.
I believe it is, yes.
It is the first creature with the creature type of Coyote. It does have haste, so it can block the Resilient Roadrunner. But when it ETBs, another target creature you control gets +1/+1 and gains haste until end of turn. You can also plot it for 1 and a red.
So it cannot block the Roadrunner because it has protection. Protection from coyotes.
That's true.
So the Roadrunner could block the coyote.
The coyote cannot block the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. It's a new creature type is funny. The art between the two runs together. It's obviously a fun reference, and we're a big fan of that. One of the other cool cards that I want to point out is a World Champion card.
Yeah.
The Duelist of the Mind.
The Mind.
So we had the what was the fairy?
The Fairy Mastermind.
The Fairy Mastermind was the previous world champion. This one is Nathan Steuer. I don't know what you want me to do with that. I don't know what he wants me to do with that. Nathan.
Steuer.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
Stour?
Whatever. One in a...
Fibble them.
Duelist of the Mind is one in a blue human advisor for Star 3, Flying in Vigilance. Duelist of the Mind's power is equal to the number of cards that you've drawn this turn, and then whenever you commit a crime, you may draw a card. If you do discard a card, it triggers only once per turn. It can block the Fairy Mastermind.
It can block the Fairy Mastermind.
And you're just getting some more value for cards that you draw. And it wants you to commit a crime and give you a little card draw. Two mana, I feel like for a two mana something three with Flying and Vigilance is probably going to be... decent card.
Like I said, I think this is one of those commit a crime cards that will have some staying power just because it's value.
Yeah.
It's just value.
Absolute value. Next, we got a new Fibblethip. Fibblethip lost on the range. One blue for a legendary creature homunculus, 1/1 with ward 2. So Fibblethip's going to be a little protected.
Mm-hmm.
He also still seems like he's pretty lost.
Yeah, he is lost on the range.
He
dismounted Borborygmos.
Yeah, dismounted Borborygmos. That would be hilarious if Borborygmos was in the background, like, fighting something, but I don't think he is. With three abilities on top of ward 2, you may look at the top card of your library at any time. The top card of your library has plot. The plot cost is equal to its mana cost, and then you can plot non-land cards from the top of your library. Fibblethip, that is the plot mechanic, as we talked about previously. You are able to use mana to put a card face down and then cast it on a future turn without paying its mana cost.
Is it face down? I'm just looking at the...
Is it face down?
We have plot on the Dust Animus, two cards over.
Exile the card from your hand, cast it as a sorcery. Okay, yeah. No, it is not... I guess it is not face down. I still got all the disguise on the brain.
You know. Disguise.
But you basically exile a card and then are able to cast it for free later. And Fibblethip is letting you do that from the top of your library, effectively extending your hand by one and then giving you something to put mana into if you don't have anything in your hand that you want to cast.
Yeah. Not just one, just like continue. I mean, you could just, as long as you have the mana, you could just, all right, I'll just plot this one mana thing just to see there's the thing I want. Cool.
And as long as it's not a land on the top of your library, you're going to get value out of that. But yeah, we have the return of Fibblethip, which is great. The two big ones that I personally want to talk about are Obeka and Riku, because they both reference some... new style of card design that we haven't really seen yet. Obeka, Splitter of Seconds, 1 blue, black, red for a 2/5 Ogre Warlock with Menace, legendary creature. Whenever Obeka, Splitter of Seconds deals combat damage to a player, you get that many additional upkeep steps after this phase. That is awesome. We've had cards that do cleanup phases, so you get an additional untap upkeep draw. But where you only get one. This gives you multiple more upkeeps, which there are a ton of cards that are kind of all right that have at the beginning of your upkeep, at the end of your upkeep, at whatever point in your upkeep, you get this effect. Where now, Obeka, she has a little bit of evasiveness as with Menace. 2/5, so probably not going to not be killed by a lot of things that would be able to block her still. Yeah. And if you connect with her at base, you're going to get two additional upkeeps, so two more upkeep triggers for all of the cards that want you to hit your upkeep. And then if you just buff her, give her trample and stuff, it gets even more out of control.
Yeah. Some of my favorite cards that I was looking at this a little bit, thinking about building it, and unfortunately there's not enough support for the way I want to do it, which is the court cycles. The two court cycles from Eldraine,
where
if you're the Monarch, you do this on your upkeep. Which sucks, because oftentimes, if you have that, obviously people are, one, not going to let you be the Monarch at your upkeep, because one, they want the card draw, and two, that's a powerful effect. But if now it's like, I hit you, I get the Monarch, now I have two triggers of, like, one of the red ones is do 7 damage at the beginning of your upkeep. Do 7 damage at the beginning of your upkeep. Okay.
It's very challenging to keep the Monarchy, but I think to the Shrine cards.
Shrine cards are also good,
There's a lot of 1 and 2 cost legendary enchantments, and even Shrine creatures that have various effects at the beginning of your upkeep. Some of them just, like, add adding mana, doing damage, mm-hmm. like making opponents sacrifice creatures, very powerful effects that are not really able to be taken away from you. But I just like that there's now a new legendary creature that you can build around and use some of these less powerful cards that really want you to have more upkeep.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. The other really awesome card that references a new type of card, this is the first time this term has been used on a Magic the Gathering card. Green, blue, red, it is Riku of Many Paths, a 3/3 human wizard that says, whenever you cast a modal spell, this is the first time a card is printed with the word modal spell. Modal spells are spells that have multiple options. So you cast it and it's like, choose one, choose two. You can choose the same one multiple times, that kind of stuff.
These are referenced in the rules, yes. But not necessarily on the text of a card up to this point.
Yes. And these do trigger off of spree abilities as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you cast a modal spell, you choose up to X, where X is the number of times you chose a mode for that spell. You're not restricted on the number on which option you are allowed to choose and how many times. You get three options with Riku, which are exile the top card of your library, and then until the end of your next turn, you may play it. Put a +1/+1 counter on Riku of Many Paths, and he gains trample until end of turn. And you can create a 1/1 blue bird creature token with flying. Obviously, I think the most powerful one there is exiling the top card of your library and then being able to play it until the end of your next turn. But you're probably not going to want to do that 7 times in a turn.
No.
So you're going to be able to grow Riku and give him trample. You're going to be able to create a lot of 1/1 blockers with flying, which is very valuable. Mm-hmm. I think a 1/1 bird is very, very valuable to have. And as a passive ability, a 3-mana 3/3 and a lot of modal spells are some of the best, like, spells that you can cast as instants and sorceries, just having versatility, mm-hmm. and a lot of them can be done at, like, 1 or 2 mana, so they're very cheap, and then there's a lot of them that, there's obviously the expensive ones that you can get from, that want you to have your commander in play, like Jeskha's Wail, where you can get both of the modes.
Yeah.
Having a new play style and build around commander, I think, is a very fun... very fun thing. Riku's probably one of my favorite cards from the set.
Riku's a very interesting card, and it's nice when they act when they explore design spaces that they've been playing with, you know, they've been building for years,
mm-hmm.
instead of necessarily like taking the set mechanic and making a very hyper niche commander for it.
Okay. Well, what cards do you want to talk about?
Let's see. So one of the first ones is Aven Interrupter.
Ah, yes. So we got another stacks piece here with the Aven Interrupter. You want to go with this?
Sure. It's a bird rogue, 1 white-white for 2/2, has flash and flying, and when it enters the battlefield, exile target spell. It becomes plotted. The reason I like this is, one, we don't see a lot of stack interaction in white. I mean, Reprieve came out last year, and that was a big one. Mana Tithe is always kind of looming in the white deck. But Aven Interrupter, not as good as a counterspell, obviously, but plotting a spell can oftentimes just negate its effectiveness.
Like, absolutely.
If you plot a counterspell,
you can only use a counterspell at sorcery. You can only then use it at sorcery speed.
Which... never be able to use it. Or if you even just giving yourself that extra turn... when that comes in white, I think is going to be very valuable. I mean, pre-sale at $680, according to MTG Goldfish.
Yes. Also, despite the fact that you are plotting their cards, and they would be able to cast them for free, it does also have the static ability of spells your opponents cast from graveyards and from exile cost 2 more mm-hmm. to cast, making a plot not nearly as fun to use.
We don't have to look this one up. I just wanted to point out that Canyon Crab is now another soldier in the Crab King's army. Let's go, Crabs.
I knew you were going to bring up the fucking crab. Annie Flash the Veteran, I believe, is the new character that we were referencing earlier as well.
Yes.
Annie Flash the Veteran is a 3 red, green, white legendary human rogue, 4/5 with Flash. It would be really weird if she didn't have Flash.
It'd be so strange.
It's in her name. When she enters the battlefield, if you cast her, return target permanent card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped, and whenever Annie becomes tapped, you exile the top 2 cards of your library and you can play them this turn. obviously the main way you would be able to tap her is by attacking, but there's also a ton of equipment and other abilities that would allow her to tap. You could have her
saddle something.
Exactly, exactly. I think 6 is a little overcost for the suite of abilities that she has. Having Flash is kind of not that important.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. It's more of a flavorful thing than anything else.
Next one I want to look at is the Free Strider Lookout.
I believe... Let's see. Free Strider Lookout.
Yes. Whenever it's two and a green for a human rogue with reach, 3/3. Whenever you commit a crime, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them onto the battlefield tapped. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Boo.
Boo.
Once per turn.
That being said, like we said, there are so many ways to commit a crime. Like, there's so many things. It's like, pay one. Exile a card from a graveyard, or just target their two of your opponents in combat, buff one of their things. You can get four, you can ramp 4 times each go around the board in a turn cycle. So I really like that one. And one of the last ones that I wanted to look at specifically was Rambling Possum.
Rambling Possum.
So this is the color break card. So it's in green. It's a 2 and a green for a possum mount, 3/3. Whenever Rambling Possum attacks while saddled, it gets +1/+2 until end of turn. That's normal. This it has saddle for 1. This is the color break. This is usually a blue ability. Then you may return any number of creatures that saddled this to their owner's hands. So we don't often see in green an ability to bounce creatures back to your own hand. And there are a lot of, obviously, ETBs in green that'd be nice just, like, hit multiple times.
Absolutely. And those are often creatures that might have lower power and toughness, so they're not as valuable as attackers or blockers.
Exactly.
But in a saddling format, you can also... I want you to note this. It has saddle 1. You can tap any number of other creatures you control that have power 1 or more to saddle it. So you can tap 5 creatures and then return them all to your hand.
Yeah.
Which is also, in a way, something that you could do to protect from suspected board wipes or other kinds of interaction that you might be afraid of on a future turn. You can only saddle at sorcery speed, sadly.
True.
But...
I will say, I lied. There's one more card we need to talk about. I believe it's on the aftermath sheet. The Esoteric Duplicator.
Esoteric Duplicator.
So this is...
This is on the Big Score.
Big Score. This is what we call a problem. So it's 2 and a blue for an artifact clue. Whenever you sacrifice Esoteric Duplicator or another artifact, you may pay 2 generic mana. If you do, at the beginning of your next end step, create a token that's a copy of that artifact, and you can pay 2 and sack it for it to draw a card. Now, there's an infinite combo that you can draft with this.
You can draft?
And Mindslaver. Because Mindslaver is also on the Big Score sheet.
Oh, hold on. Let's see, Mindslaver... Where are you? Oh, yes, from the breaking news.
Yes, the breaking news. It's a 6-cost legendary artifact. Tap, sacrifice it, you control.
Pay 4, tap.
You control, sacrifice Mindslaver. You control target players during their next turn.
And if you pay an additional 2, you then will get a token copy of Mindslaver.
Yeah.
Okay.
And an Esoteric Duplicator does not say non-token. It just says when you sacrifice an artifact. This also, though not in the set, can go infinite with Ugin's Nexus as well, which allows you to take extra turns.
Love an infinite combo. And you referenced the Big Score. There are actually 3 total bonus sheets that are going to be included in this set.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get really, really arrogant and think that all of your sets are going to have Aftermath-style same price or more expensive booster packs of 5 cards.
Should we take a moment to just stare at the camera as though they're Watsy?
You disgust us.
Watsy. Anyway.
If you're at home, you're fine. But the Big Score bonus sheet is a total of 30 cards that was very clearly an Aftermath-style set that they then later integrated. It does have a couple reprints, but it is mostly new designed cards, and the cards are I will say, if it were an Aftermath style set, it would be a lot more valuable than Aftermath, simply because the cards that are printed in the big score are unhinged.
Oh yeah.
Some might say, you get cards like the Sword of Wealth and Wealth and Power. Wealth and Power, which gives you protection from instants and sorceries, aka protection from any interaction, which is a little bit crazy. And they scare me. a lot of these big score cards are very scary. We are getting reprints like Torpor Orb as well. People have looked at cards like Tarnation Vista and are like, this is the next Nyxa Shrine to Nyx, and it's like,
Tarnation Vista enters the battlefield tapped. As it enters, choose a color. Tap, add one mana of chosen color. One tap. For each color among monocolored permanents you control, add one mana of that color.
So, because it is a land, it has one in tap that is effectively two mana.
Mm-hmm.
So you need three monocolor permanents of different colors to net positive on that interaction, which I think is pretty difficult to pull off, because if you're running a deck that already has the ability, that has access to three colors, you're not going to want a tapped land that only taps for one color.
Yeah.
You know?
It might be more, especially in Commander, it won't be as
I don't even think
bougie as I think the price that is at the presale price suggests.
Yeah, right now its presale is around $20. We're looking at the extended art frames right now, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to have a lot of use. I think it's just going to be expensive because it's a mythic on a bonus sheet.
I mean, if you do have a way to untap it, then you do have a way to generate mana at as many times as you can untap it, basically.
Yeah.
As long as you have three colored.
But at that point, you'd be better off with a Nyxthos Shrine to Nyx in almost any situation.
True. I think the real reason is people want to yell, "What in tarnation?" whenever they play it. Hey, look, Sword of Wealth and Power. You're just talking about that. When equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create a treasure token. When you cast your next instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most powerful swords. The sword cycle was done. We didn't know we needed another sword, but they gave one to us anyway.
You know what? As long as there's pairs of things, they'll make swords.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But the entire big score bonus sheet is built around the idea that, like, this is the thing that they've stolen, which is pretty cool. We also have a new Lotus. The Lotus Ring, a 3-mana equipment artifact with Indestructible.
Indestructible.
It also has equipped creature gets +3/+3, has vigilance, and tap and sacrifice this creature. Add 3 mana of any one color and equip 3. So it's not going to net positive on mana because it does have an equip cost of 3.
Unless you can skirt that cost.
Unless you have any of the many, many, many ways to reduce equip costs.
Yeah. Hey, how's your Pure Steel Paladin doing?
Pure Steel, my equipment deck would love a Lotus Ring.
Right.
Absolutely love. Also, 6 total mana investment. It's indestructible. And it gives +3/+3 in vigilance. So you're able to attack with whatever it's equipped with. And then tap and sacrifice it for the 3 mana. And then you can repeatedly do that. I am into that. Those are kind of the biggest one. Oh, Loot, the Key Loot to Everything, is a green, blue, red, 1/2 legendary beast noble. It's just a little guy. It's just a cute little guy with ward 1, and at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among other non-land permanents you control. You may play those cards this turn. Just a little bit of value at the beginning of your turn.
Yeah.
Nothing too crazy. Not going to be the $20-ish presale price worthy in my mind. But we get reprints like Grand Abolisher as well. The big score is going to have a lot of really good cards. But it's not the only bonus sheet. We got 2 more bonus sheets.
Yeah.
The Breaking News, which is a different kind of frame. It has 65 cards that are all reprints. And pretty much, I think all of them are able to trigger commit a crime, so all of them interact with your opponent's stuff in some ways, and there's a lot of very powerful reprints available with that as well. I'm not too, some of them are going to be 60-cent cards, so
I'm just excited to whenever I play one of these, mimic the news announcer fish from SpongeBob. Breaking news!
The one I'm, like, it does have, I will say it does have some very expensive, I can't with you today. Just can't. There are going to be some pretty valuable cards reprinted. Mana Drain is the one that I would love to get the most. Instant speed counterspell where you get an amount of colorless mana equal to the spell's mana value that you countered. Mind Break Trap, which I believe hasn't been.
I think this is the first reprint of it, yeah.
I think that is the first. It's an instant trap, which is a subtype of instance that we haven't seen in a while. You can get Oko, Thief of Crowns, a.k.a. the Broco Oko. I don't know if anyone's ever called that before, but it felt appropriate in the moment for me. But then you're going to get things like Bedevil, which we've gotten a lot of reprints of.
Yeah.
Collective Defiance, which is like a 50-cent card. Detention Sphere, another 50-cent card. Nothing too crazy. Cruel Ultimatum. I love the Ultimatum cycle of cards, but again, they're not super powerful.
Right.
Decimate, that kind of stuff. Anything that stands out from...
I enjoy all the flavor text on the... breaking news reprints, because they're all like their headlines, like reanimate, local man defies death, morticians mortified.
That's actually hilarious. But yeah, there's obviously going to be a couple of big hits that you can have, which is going to make people chase it, but most of the cards are going to be worth less than a dollar. You can also get them in textured foil, which make them easier to read and look better in my mind. And then the last bonus sheet is a special guests. The special guests is something that's been coming up somewhat regularly with some of these sets, and there's just 10 of them, and they're all reprints of they're all just reprints with new art, and some of them are going to be pretty good. We obviously just have Desert, which is
it's thematic to the set.
It is we also get things like the Brazen Borrower, Desertion, Morbid Opportunist, Port Razor, Notion Thief being reprint is pretty cool, Mystic Snake, Stoneforge Mystic is probably going to be one of the more valuable ones
that
you can get. I imagine Notion Thief.
Prismatic Vista is a good one.
Oh, yeah, Prismatic Vista. That's probably... Actually, that probably is going to be the most valuable one. It's a fetch land for any basic land.
And doesn't count, and does not put it on the battlefield tapped. It puts it on normal.
That's the basic. But three bonus sheets. A lot of value is packed into some of these bonus sheet cards. Obviously pending what art you get, and then obviously which card specifically you get as well. That is about all that we have to say.
We've said a lot on that.
We have said a lot on Outlaws of Thunder Junction. We've been going for almost an hour at this point.
So let's move on to the couple of last...
What are your final thoughts, Sam? Don't rush. The Outlaws. The Outlaws.
Well, here's the thing. So next Monday, we will be doing some pack openings for... on our live, and then in 2 weeks we'll be doing a pre-release style limited format.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this will have some very interesting build arounds. I can see a lot of it flopping though.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of the mechanics we see that pops up a lot is when this enters battlefield, or when you tap the you get a 1/1 mercenary that has tap give target creature +1/+0. Until end of turn, activate only as a sorcery. There are a lot of those in the Boros. I think that's the Boros kind of archetype. I haven't looked into the archetypes yet, but...
I feel like that one could probably take over a little bit, honestly.
It could, but...
If you create enough tokens.
If you create... That's the key. But I think I feel like this will be a very... These will be very fast games of limited.
That's fair. I think, much like most of these sets... the Magic specific sets, there's obviously going to be some mechanics that you can build around. I feel like this is just one of those sets that either you build around the mechanics in the set, or most of the cards are just not going to be very useful outside of this specific set. Like something like Wilds of Eldraine, there's just a lot of great enchantment synergies there.
Yeah.
And you can build around like the token enchantments that they make, the roll tokens, stuff. But there's also just enchantment synergies, which is nice. And then Lost Caverns of Ixalan, you can build around Craft with, you can build around Discover if you want, but there's just a lot of synergy in the set. Murders of Karlov Manor, I think, was a bit too specific in its set mechanics. I feel like this might be a bit too set specific in its mechanics as well, but that remains to be seen. I think Spree's going to come up a lot. You're going to see a lot of... I think you're going to see a lot of decks that want some very specific Spree cards in them.
Yeah.
Like several of my decks, actually, are probably going to grab
Spree cards. Spree cards, I think, are versatile enough to find their place in most Eternal formats, as well as most not modern formats. What do they call those? Rotating formats.
Rotating, yeah. Yeah, standard? Who plays standard anymore? That's funny. So we're just going to wrap up here a little bit with a couple D&D things and video game related things for WotC. First, D&D has a collaboration with LEGO right now. Wizards of the Coast released Dungeons & Dragons Red Dragon's Tale, which is a new adventure that utilizes the set pieces and monsters that you can see in the LEGO set of the same name. The adventure, written by D&D game architect Chris Perkins, is made for level 5 characters, although it does feature some interesting story twists to explain how a group of tier 2 adventurers could survive encounters with a beholder and an adult red dragon, both of which are present in the LEGO set. D&D Beyond account holders can access the LEGO-themed adventure for free, along with several digital tie-ins like digital dice. And you can also get the LEGO sets at retail right now.
Cool.
I love a free adventure.
Love a free adventure.
Chris Perkins, I think, is one of the better adventure writers that WotC has right now. So I'm sure he had a lot of fun with that. I do love that. I love LEGO. LEGO's a fun product. We are millennial men.
We are.
We are fans of the LEGO sets.
Oh yeah. Built many a LEGO in my day.
I have also built many. I have a LEGO set that I was gifted for my birthday 2 months ago that I need to put together. But I like that they're willing to integrate some D&D stuff, and I love that they're just giving it to you for free.
Oh, yeah. I do think it's very audacious of them to say that this is the first D&D LEGO set when we have all been using LEGO characters for minis before we could afford minis.
That is true. That is true. I never did that.
Oh, but I definitely did that. That and little plastic figurines of Digimon, Pokemon, and
We've done that for monsters. I had a Lord of the Rings Monopoly from the early 2000s, and I had little pewter fellowship members, so I just used those as the character minis for a while. But yeah, LEGO good, free D&D adventure good. Digital tie-ins for people that use the digital assets on D&D Beyond, good. I see this as a win.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Obviously, LEGOs are going to be expensive, so
always
deal with that. WotC and Hasbro are also investing $1 billion into, quote, gaming ecosystems. After the release of Baldur's Gate 3 and Monopoly Go as standout successes, Hasbro and WotC plan to invest $1 billion into gaming ecosystems. Larian Studios has knocked it out of the park with Baldur's Gate 3, but apparently they're not going to be going back.
Yeah, we've seen some reports of the head of Larian Studios saying, hey, we're tired of... The team really enjoyed working on Baldur's Gate 3. It was a big success. Nothing wrong with WotC. Our team's just done with it, so I believe they're not developing any DLC, and they're not going to be developing Baldur's Gate 4, as some people predicted.
Yeah. I'm sure they don't want to. I'm sure they want to move on to something else. But with the amount of success that Baldur's Gate 3 has and the amount of money, I wouldn't be surprised if they were very heavily pressured into finding a group of people that wanted to make another one.
I'm sure WotC would easily sell it to the next person. I know. I mean, also, Larian's been working on it for how... I mean, it's been it was in beta for years and years and years.
Yeah, for a very long time. But along those lines, we do have some screenshots for an upcoming Dungeons & Dragons game, Dark Alliance, Echoes of the Blood War. There's not really any information, but you can go check out screenshots of it if you like. It looks very gross. but that's just one. There's just one example of some games that they're going to be working on. I imagine that they're going to find some company that wants to make a Baldur's Gate 4. I would love if they would experiment with some other gameplay styles. I would love to see a 2.5D turn-based RPG. Something approach someone like a Square Enix and be like, hey, can you make an Octopath Traveler style game set in a D&D world, set on the Sword Coast, on Dragonlance, on wherever? But obviously they're going to be making a big push because video games are, I mean, they make a lot of money right now. I believe they get revenue and profits a lot of the time higher than movies and TV shows. The problem is, games like Spider-Man 2 cost $300 million to make.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we also know that Christopher Penis has been very interested in expanding Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro in the video game scene for several years now.
For those of you that don't know, Christopher Penis is who we call Chris Cox, the CEO of Hasbro.
But yes, I remember we talked about this about a year ago. After an investors meeting, I believe, and Chris Cox said that one of the big pushes they were going to make in the future was to expand that video game space. And yeah, $1 billion is gonna go.
Yeah, you might be able to get two whole AAA games out of that.
Did you see the thing about the Quad A game?
What?
Yeah.
Ubisoft? Ubisoft is so. So stupid with their term. This isn't the first time they've tried to create like a new term to market their game as higher than AAA, which is fucking stupid because it's just a classification of budget effectively. These video game companies out here are wildin'.
They're wildin'.
They are wildin'. Anyway, that is about all of the news that we have. The biggest one was the upcoming release and complete set spoiler for Outlaws of Thunder Junction. If you are so inclined to look at some of the cards that are designed for the Commander decks, feel free. We are not doing that today. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
That is a lot. And it's mostly reprints anyway. The Commander deck seems somewhat interesting, but most of the value in these ones, I think, are going to be coming from the reprints in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I will say that that Izzet Spellslinger deck looks badass, though. Highly recommend.
It looks very interesting.
It looks very fun.
Well, it's very interesting because it's whenever you cast your second spell each turn, do X.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
That's very cool.
I like that mechanic. Anyway, we will end this episode 64 of the Duels and Mana Dorks podcast every other week, as we always do, by taking questions, comments, and concerns, thoughts, and or ideas from the audience. In this case, the TikTok live chat, as we record this podcast every other week live on the TikTok. Samuel.
Joe Hansel asks, who do you think is the best commander in Magic?
Oh, well, that is such a subjective question,
right?
That it is impossible to answer. Well, let's go and see what the number one ranked one on EDH Rec is.
Please. Last time I checked a couple months ago, it was Atraxa.
Yeah, that checks out. Let's see. Top commanders. Rank one, Atraxa, Praetor's Voice. Number two, the Ur-Dragon. Number three, Miriam, Sentinel Worm. Number four, Lathrop, Blade of the Elves, which I find interesting. And then number five, Yuriko, the Tiger's Shadow.
We'll say, since last time I looked, I believe Edgar Markov has fallen a couple of places, and Ishin, Two Heavens as One, has bumped up there.
Yeah, Ishin is now number six, and I think that's just because there's an Outlaws of Thunder Junction card that, or some cards that really want to have their abilities triggered multiple times.
I believe there's a backup commander in one of the decks for it has doubling combat damage triggers.
Interesting. I don't think any of those cards are the best commander. I think the best commander is the commander you like to play.
The way you like to play it.
The way you like to play them. Also, the five-color Aragorn the Uniter. I know he's four colors, but he's also black.
You need a new stand-up bit.
I like that. I'm not standing, I'm sitting.
Friend of the show, Bryce McKenzie, who sent us our lovely deck boxes.
Oh, Bryce.
He says, what's up, guys? Haven't been here in a while. We had a daughter. Congratulations on a daughter.
Congratulations.
Deck boxes are holding up well. Thank you.
They are. They're quite lovely. Quite lovely. 3D printed deck boxes. Bryce McKenzie. What a guy.
Marek Sedulselt says, I've been playing a lot of Alchemy on MDG Arenas. Is Phyrexian Obliterator way overpowered, or is it just me?
No. Phyrexian Obliterator has a very, very powerful ability of when it is dealt damage, your opponent's got to sacrifice a lot of shit. the balancing factor of Phyrexian Obliterator is, A, you don't have to block him. He's just a 5-5 if you're willing to take 5 damage if he attacks. If he's left up as a blocker, then he's just a really good blocker. There are ways to kill him without dealing him damage. He has 4 black pips in his mana cost. So while he is a 4-mana 5-5, which is a good rate, the 4 mana has to be a specific color. So in multiple color decks, it can be a bit harder to get 4 black mana to cast him on curve, so he's probably going to be cast a little later in the game, and there's plenty of exiling and non-damaging board wipes and that kind of stuff that can get rid of him fairly easily.
Also asks, are creatures like Gala Greeters module? So,
yes. I believe in the context of the Riku, Riku of Many Paths, it is whenever you cast a modal spell, it does not reference a spell type. And if we're just looking at the EDH rec page right now, if you look at the creatures, a lot of them have synergies of whenever you cast instants and sorceries. But I believe it will also trigger if you have modal options from a creature spell. I don't see why not.
Yeah, but once the creature is on the board, then it's no longer a spell. It's a permanent.
That is a good point. That is a good point. Well, let's take a look at Gala Greeters.
Great card, Gala Greeters.
I like Gala Greeters. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, so it's not a spell, it's a triggered ability.
Yeah.
So it would not trigger off a... Riku would not trigger off of that.
All right, well, that's about it.
That's about all we got. That is about all we got. If you manage to make it to the end of the podcast, you're one of the real ones. At this point, the Duels and Manadors podcast is in a bit of a. A lot of our stuff, I feel like, is going to be changing in the near future. The podcast is still going to go every other week, as we always do. We want consistency. And I feel like we've been very consistent. We have not missed our uploads.
We eat a lot of fiber.
Sometimes there may have been issues with, like, the podcasting service not drafting a podcast instead of uploading a podcast onto podcast services. But if you check all of the avenues, at the very least, you'll find it somewhere. Sorry about that. But we are going to be moving away from TikTok as a platform in a lot of ways, not because of the ban or anything like that. It just, for creators, it's
kind of makes sense.
It's sucking more and more. The amount of effort you have to put into TikTok and then the amount of benefit you get out of TikTok.
We'd much rather put great content out on YouTube, where it's going to hopefully reach a wider audience and be more beneficial to us, to where we can continue to create content.
Exactly.
As opposed to TikTok, which...
Let me put it this way. You get a million views on a short... Or you get a million views on... A billion views on YouTube is going to be more valuable than a million views on TikTok. 10,000 views on YouTube, in some ways, is going to be more valuable than a million views on TikTok. TikTok, you need to make a vertical video that's at least a minute to get any sort of payment out of TikTok for anything. And a million views, you're going to get a couple bucks. 10,000 views on YouTube, if you have a CPM of like a dollar, is going to be $10. So the dollars and cents, obviously, like, we're not trying to freaking chill.
No.
But YouTube is going to be a more of an important platform to exist on for the long term of this podcast and the long term of Dungeon Bros in general. If most of the people that found us have found us from TikTok, TikTok has given us a lot of opportunities. It's not going to be a change that happens overnight. It's not that we're never going to post on TikTok ever again. It's just you can probably already tell we're de-emphasizing it a lot.
Yes.
We don't post nearly as much as we used to. The Monday Night Magic live streams, we might do TikTok for a little bit while longer, but we're going to be focusing more on YouTube live streaming for that.
Yeah. So if you enjoy us and want to continue to hear more from us, make sure to subscribe on YouTube.
On YouTube and wherever you like. Podcast services around the globe and all that. And we're working on a Patreon as well. No details on that yet of timing or what specifically, but I do want to say that from a philosophical perspective when it comes to Patreon and crowdfunding and stuff, I don't want to gouge people at all. We had TikTok subscriptions. We had a couple people subscribe to us, and I set it to $5, and that was below what they recommended. The value tier for the Patreon is going to be $5, and it will not change from $5. So we grow, and we get more money if more people join on. And that's where we're going to... That's, I think, going to be the emphasis. Obviously, we'll have tiers higher than that, where you can get more bigger benefits. And then, obviously, one lower tier just to show support. But I want to approach... There are people that have Patreons where it's like, you don't really get anything unless you're giving them, like, $20 a month. And I don't like that.
No.
Like, I don't want it to be a... someone that's in a struggling financial situation where it's like, am I going to keep Netflix or am I going to keep my Patreon for the Dungeon Bros podcast, or the Duels and Mandadorks podcast by the Dungeon Bros?
We want to give you good value.
Yeah. And I think $5 a month is something that is fairly innocuous. I subscribe to a Patreon for $5 a month and I don't notice that. And I get a lot of value out of that subscription. So I think that's just the perspective that we're approaching it from. Again, no specific timings on it, and we're only doing this at the end just to anyone that's actually listening at this point, you know, probably gives a little bit of a shit. So,
but
just want to put that out there. Some things are going to change, some things are not going to change at all, but we're still going to be our dumb idiot selves talking about Magic and D&D and all that kind of stuff.
Hopefully we'll bring that directly to your ear holes more often.
More often. Early and ad-free would be the two main benefits of the Duels and Mandadorks Patreon. So when the Patreon launches, I suspect we're going to record on the same day that we normally do. And I think, and we can talk this out off mic at some point, but I think post it as normal for Patreon members and then the following Monday for all the free feeds. I think would make sense. And I think it would be smart to, like, get ahead on a podcast so that the free feeds aren't just missing for a couple of days or something like that. I don't know. That might just be me.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll talk this out. We'll let you know more. But in the meantime.
In the meantime, till we meet again.
A bientôt.
A bientôt. Oh, lo siento. What? I speak English. I'm sorry.
You barely do that.
I speak American. Anyway,
see ya.
I was waiting for you to do your bit.
Peace.
Peace out.